Pacheco, then Senator Zaroff, Senator Duncan, Senator Fisher, Chairman Senator Coghill are present. This week's schedule is today we're going to be bringing up SJR 7, Coastal Wildlife Refuge, SJR 17, Federal Management Conservation Units, SR 13, Porcupine Herd, Caribou Herd. Senate Bill will be bringing up Senate Bill 190, Bridget Point Park, and then Senate Bill 108, and then Senate Bill 114. Get through all that today. On Wednesday, we'll be taking up Committee Substitute for House Bill 54, Earthquake and Volcano Hazard Project, Committee Substitute for House Bill 59, Judiciary Recycling and Reduction of Litter, House Joint Resolution 29, Fish Ladder at Brooks Rivers Fall, and Senate Bill 23, which is rights to ag lands. And what we're going to do in that is we'll put Senate Bill 23 up on the top side of that. And then on May the 8th, we've so far scheduled Committee Substitute for House Bill 16, Fees for Users in State Park Systems. Good, I was going to hold until you got here, Senator. Our first order of business today is that in your packets you will note that there are two resolutions that we will be taking up later on, and these have to do with a spin-off from the Water Act, and we'll be looking at those when we get down the calendar. I would like to have permission for the committee to do it out. So up first today are the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge resolutions. We will begin with Senate Resolution number 7, and I have a CS dated 5-4-87. Bradley 5-4-87 by Resources Committee. And we'll open it up for hearings. Do we have anybody signed up? We have our Lieutenant Governor Steve McAlpine here. And Steve, we welcome you to the table. And if you wish to address all three resolutions in your remarks, we'd invite you to do that. We have nobody else signed up, so we'd be able to move them.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think my remarks will be as an overview. I don't want to intrude on this process as to which resolution ought to have more merit than any other, but I think that the remarks that I make will probably lead you very easily to a conclusion, at least in terms of the administration's point of view of some of the types of things that perhaps you would want to avoid addressing in the resolution. I think I should, for the record, iterate that the point that we've tried to make time and again, and that is to keep always in mind that we in this room, indeed the legislature, the state of Alaska, the people of Alaska, are not going to be the ones making the decision as to whether or not ANWR will be open for oil and gas development and on what terms and conditions, but rather it's the Congress of the United States. And secondly, that the state of Alaska has in the past had several opportunities to deal with the Congress on other major land use issues, and that at almost every turn, the state of Alaska has failed miserably in bringing its position to the forefront, ultimately having its position adopted by the Congress of the United States. Most recently, we only have to look back to the ANILCA process and what the state's official position was then. And whether you agree or disagree with the ultimate outcome of ANILCA, you have only to look at a map of the state of Alaska together with all of the concomitant refuge areas, wildlife preserves, national monuments, national parks, those sorts of things, and compare that to what was then the state of Alaska's official position. And you recognize very quickly that the state of Alaska's position was dismissed out of hand and that something different has to be undertaken during the course of this process. You will recall that the governor said that it was the position of his administration that the ANWR be open for oil and gas development and that it be done under very strict environmental considerations. I don't think that there's any of us in this room, indeed, many people in the state of Alaska, who would disagree with that position. And I think that it's important, too, to remember always during the course of this process what the central focus of our theme ought to be, and that is the opening of ANWR for oil and gas development. There are really a host of other themes that will be brought to the table, a number of other issues that will be brought to the table, all of which will be subject to the discourse in Congress, all of which will have something to do with the decision that is made, but none of which will be the conclusory disposition of the matter, and that is whether or not it's to be opened up for oil and gas development. You may recall when the Assistant Secretary was here a couple of weeks ago, he indicated to you that some positions had been altered in the final study, different than what was proposed in the preliminary draft. And one of the situations that had been altered was the question of the concentrated or core calving area in the ANWR, and you'll recall that it's the governor's position that the core calving area ought to be reserved for a 7-year study. It is going to be very difficult when dealing with members of Congress, if you recall only that the so-called 1002 study period was from 1980 until 1986, and that the preliminary draft came out in November of 1986, and the period of time from November of 86 until now is a mere 4 months, to alter the position that was originally established in the draft report, and that is that there is a central or concentrated or core calving area. In fact, utilizing the map that was presented in the 1002 draft report, you'll note that what Interior did is they took a pink ink and they overlaid pink on pink until ultimately the area that was considered to be utilized by the Caribou in 12 out of the 16 years became a more of a red area. That is the area that the governor has stated ought to be set aside for the 7-year study. Now, you can ask yourself, is there a core calving area in reality? And I guess you can get a number of biologists from the oil companies who will say there is not. You can get biologists from environmental groups who will say there is. The fact of the matter is that the state's position is not hurt in the least by setting aside the core calving area for future study, and politically is helped tremendously in the halls of Congress, where congressmen are going to be looking for a middle ground to determine the ultimate resolution of this matter. You may recall another issue that the governor discussed that many of you are perhaps concerned with, and that is the question of the land exchanges. And the governor asked that the state of Alaska withdraw from active discussion of the land exchange process until it could be concluded whether or not it was in the state's best interest to go forward. As recently as late last week, hearings were held in the House, and the central focus of the attack that was made on Assistant Secretary Horn had to do with the land exchange process. During the course of my discussions back in Washington, D.C., over the 2.5 weeks that I was there, the only members of Congress who were familiar with the process were adamantly opposed to it. I'm not sure where their source of information was, but I'm fairly sure that whoever was providing them with the information was likewise adamantly opposed to that process. One congressman who is in a position of imminent power in this particular process described the entire undertaking as insidious. I think if you had the opportunity to look through the National Wildlife Federation's report and read what they had to say about the land exchange process, they said that during the course of the study process, but independent of it, senior appointees of the Interior Department, now that's their phraseology for political appointees, entered into discussions with native corporations to explore the possibility of exchanging title to publicly owned petroleum resources of the coastal plain for native-owned inholdings in other lands in and near other wildlife refuges in Alaska. While it is conceivable that exchanges of this kind might have merit, the department elected to conduct the discussions of land assessment in secrecy, avoiding any possibility of public involvement in these critical affairs. These negotiations were undertaken with a cynical disregard for possible public reaction and the fact that the lands involved are public lands, not to mention a part of widely treasured National Wildlife Refuge system. This is a synopsis of the general feeling of those individuals in Congress that I had the opportunity to discuss this matter with, and these are the same conclusions that they're drawing. I would offer to this committee and to the legislature as a whole one observation. There are two bills presently in the House that are being considered. One is a very pro-environmental bill offering to classify the entire ANWR as in a wilderness status. That bill is not going to pass. Another is a bill that would literally open up the coastal plain for what many consider to be unfettered development. That bill was sponsored by Representative Young of Alaska. That bill is not going to pass. Those bills have been offered really as extreme counterbalances to one another, and I think Representative Young is very candid in that regard in saying that there had to be a counterbalance to Mo Udall's bill in order to establish both poles of the spectrum. If we can assume that 150 people or 150 members of Congress are going to come down on the side of Mr. Udall's bill, and I think that's a plausible conclusion, and that 150 are going to come down on the side of Representative Young's bill, and I think that likewise is a plausible conclusion, that leaves about 157 members of the House of Representatives, in addition to the members of the Senate, that are going to be making the decision on this matter. And it's those 157 members that we are anxious to target. It's those 157 members that lie in the middle ground, and it's the middle ground to which any deliberative body, whether it be this body or any other, is always going to strive to achieve. No member of Congress wants to return to their district facing long lines at gasoline pumps and explain to their constituents why they voted against perhaps the greatest potential for oil and gas development in America. Likewise, none of them want to return to their districts and explain to constituents who are familiar with the Love Canals, who are familiar with the EPA Superfund projects, who have adopted an environmental ethic, why they voted to open up a national wildlife refuge for unmitigated development. So having said that, I think we can all relate to the middle ground position. It's that position that we as a state hope to stake out. It's in staking out this position that we feel the state of Alaska is going to gain the much desired credibility which was lost during the ANILCA process. And while it may be that that is not the most politically popular position, again, it's not a poll of the citizens of Alaska that's going to move this issue over the top. It's not an election held in the state of Alaska that's going to ultimately determine the resolution of this issue. Rather, it's the staking out of the middle ground, the perception that is going to allow Congress to listen to representatives of the state of Alaska. It's bringing that information to the table, which is going to provide them the answers to the questions that they have, that is ultimately going to result in success in this project. So with those ideas in mind, I would be willing to answer any questions, but caution you that there are a number of issues that are going to be very volatile in this process, and issues that we don't believe that the members of the legislature or the members of the administration, for that matter, need to pick a fight on when perhaps the fight is going to be fought in a totally different arena.
Is there any questions of the Lieutenant Governor? Senator Sturgeon?
Mr. Chairman, through the Chair, Mr. Lieutenant Governor, what's the... what is your feeling if you have the two bills in, the Udall bill and the Young bill? Do you see something coming from either of those? They're so diametrically opposed, or do you see a new bill?
I think that there will be a new piece of legislation drafted. I think that Lindsey Thomas from Georgia stands in an excellent position of being the person who not only drafts but prefers for adoption that particular piece of legislation. And I think that a middle ground position will ultimately be adopted by Congress.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, just if you could just explore that a little bit. It's been surprising, I think, to some of us to see both the New York Times and the Washington Post with positive editorials. What's your kind of analysis at this point of where you see Congress?
Well, Senator, with respect to the editorials, let me back up and say that several months ago when this whole problem was first analyzed, there were on the table two editorials, one from an Arizona newspaper and one from a Texas newspaper, And one of the things we realized early on was that we were going to have to gain the minds and hearts of editors throughout the United States. And a very strong effort has been put forward to discuss these matters with the New York Times, with the Washington Post, with West Coast editors, and publishers of various journals. We are now beginning to see from the various Western states legislatures resolutions which likewise are supporting of this, and we hope to see a whole lot more of that going on. I think that, that part of what you're beginning to see is that journalists are beginning to understand that the state of Alaska is taking a different position in this than they took with Anelka. During that process, the state was viewed as being a very pro-development entity. It was viewed as though the state had lost its conscience for environmental concerns and those sorts of things. And whether individual members like that or not, the fact is that, that the, again, the environmental ethic has been adopted by even most editors and journalists. And as long as they perceive the state's position as being an honest one, as being a balanced one, I think you're going to see a whole lot more of those types of editorials coming out in favor of basically the approach that the state is taking.
Mr. Chairman, just one final question. Have you, are you working to establish a concerted approach, or are you kind of going it alone on this? Are you working with the oil and gas industry and the you know the special committee that's been formed, or really what's been done?
I don't think that we should, nor do I believe we could, whether we wanted to or not, work closely, align ourselves with that.
I'm not saying align, but in terms of, are you going it alone? I guess that's the question.
Well, let me put it like this, Senator. I think that it's very important that we have a balance struck, and I think that it's incumbent upon the oil industry to adhere to a very pro-development line, to argue their position, to bring to the table that information that's available that demonstrates their ability in the development of oil and gas projects in Alaska. I think that the environmental community is going to bring some very severe questions to the table. They're going to ask questions about solid waste disposal and hazardous waste, both generated and disposed. I think they're going to bring up questions about air pollution on the North Slope, and I think that we're going to have to go in and answer those. But I don't believe the state of Alaska ought to be, as a public entity, ought to be aligned with either group, and I think that it's important that we as policymakers in this state maintain that middle ground, open at all times, making ourselves available to whatever information is brought to the table, but at the same time steering a middle course with a sensitivity to the to the needs of both communities.
Any other questions of the Lieutenant Governor?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Jones.
Lieutenant Governor, you mentioned the issue of putting into private hands lands within a valuable refuge as an issue. I think we have to also consider the valuable refuge lands that are being obtained through this acquisition, and it really isn't lands, it's subsurface rights. So I think we need to make sure that that issue is clear, that it's also viable for refuge lands that are involved in the trade.
Yeah, I think, Senator, that the Assistant Secretary brings some very interesting and I think, too, logical arguments to the table. Again, we're dealing with Congress. Interest and logic has very little to do with the outcome of the decision that's going to be reached. The point of all of this is that you have a legislative body that views the opportunity for Interior to swap lands in Alaska for very valuable resources, ultimately resulting in the executive's ability to circumvent the congressional mandate of ANILCA and thereby circumvent their ability to make a decision with respect to these issues. In other words, it's the proponents of this theory's notion that if you can get private ownership in ANWR, that then the executive branch can come in and by executive decree allow leasing and drilling. And you may have saw the new newspaper clip where Secretary Horn was taken on by George Miller over the fact that they drilled the kick well in ANWR, and saying to him in no uncertain terms that violated the spirit of the congressional intent in ANILCA. They view this whole process as an attempt on a larger scale to accomplish just that, violate the intent of ANILCA by circumventing Congress's ability to make the decision. You have private ownership, the executive comes in and says, go ahead and drill and open it up under exploratory terms. They find a whole lot of oil and gas reserves there. They then come back and with that political pressure begin to maneuver Congress. It would be as though we as an administration tried to circumvent this body on some other type of matter. You folks would very probably be upset about that. The members of Congress fall in that same vein, and likewise, there isn't a single one of them that I spoke to who think that this is a good idea. Most of them think that it's a terrible idea.
Could I answer your question? Is there any other questions of the Lieutenant Governor? Senator Zorro.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Lieutenant Governor, on the what's happening on the overall oil scene at the national level? Just recently in the news here, I heard that did the House pass a resolution or a bill which would ban future exports to Pacific Rim countries?
Well, I think what you're referring to, Senator, is an amendment to H.R. 3, which basically was targeted to what were called export refineries. And they defined an export refinery as any refinery that exported more than 30% of its refined product outside of the United States, and then prohibited that type of activity for all refineries in the continental United States and Alaska. There are only two refineries in the whole of the United States that would be affected. One would be one in Hawaii, and the other would be one that is planned here in Alaska by APRI in Valdez. Since the Hawaiian export refinery was specifically excluded from the definition, that leaves only one targeted facility in the entire United States. And basically what you had was the maritime industry saying we are not going to allow the movement of refined products in foreign-hulled vessels when we have them locked in to the movement of crude oil in American bottoms. And that was the thrust of that. We're working hard to alter that decision because it would mean the loss of approximately 7 million man-hours of work in the construction of such a facility here in Alaska. But that's the only movement with respect to that. There are some spinoffs that would affect our ability to export crude oil out of Cook Inlet. But we're working with the delegation to try to alter those situations.
But if that were to go through, wouldn't that enhance the Anwar exploration? In the feeling there that the general feeling would be then that this oil would not be exported over Pacific Rim countries and would be not necessarily more of an advantage for Alaska than the 50 states.
Well, actually, under the terms of the export, memory failing us, Export Administration Act, it's actually the transportation facility that's governed so that any crude that's shipped through the Trans-Alaska Pipeline is prohibited from export, and that's where you're locking in Prudhoe Bay and Kuparik. And in addition to that, if Anwar were developed in the near future and those facilities were utilized, basically that same precept would govern the ability to export Anwar crude. As long as that act is in place, we would be locked into shipping it to the lower 48. And unfortunately, there's just a whole lot of people. I'm not sure that the members of Congress don't understand it because I think they do, but I think a whole lot of people in the United States look at this and sort of view it as an antagonistic sort of thing, that how can the state of Alaska, or contradictory, how can the state of Alaska be coming in and saying that America is energy deficient and therefore needs to develop Anwar, and in the next breath say we ought to be exporting Alaskan oil to the Pacific Rim. And I think we all understand that if you have marbles in three circles and you move our marbles to Japan and Japan moves their marbles to Mexico and we buy Mexican crude, that there isn't a whole lot of difference in the underlying crude supply. It's really a transportation mechanism. But I don't think that Anwar is going to escape the terms of the Export Administration Act. I think it's going to be locked into domestic use, transported in American hulled vessels. I would certainly like to see that changed, as I'm sure would all of us in this room, but the likelihood of it being changed or the early horizon of that occurring is just not there.
Thank you. Senator Lass, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Lieutenant Governor, I'd like to get back to the land exchange issue. You say the
the vast majority of the congressmen you talked to in Washington were opposed to the land exchange.
The vast majority, Senator, in all candor, were not even aware that the land exchange was going on.
I would assume if I was opposed to opening Anwar, I would also be opposed to the land exchange or anything that has anything to do with Anwar. So is there any indication that, those people who are opposed to the land exchange would possibly be in favor of opening Anwar? Or is it a negative on both sides?
Well,
it is, you know, there's no point in, really involving that.
No, I'm not sure that, I think, again, taking it back to the point that we can sit down and hypothesize a scenario where the land exchange process would make eminent good sense in terms to the, in terms of the political ability it brings to move the question. And I guess you have to begin with the notion under a 90-10 scenario that makes very little sense. So you first have to remove the state's financial stake in this and get it down to about the 50-50 level or something lower than that before, and the secretary, assistant secretary, concluded that a priori. Said that, and I wouldn't doubt what Senator Stevens in his remarks, knowing that you can't have one without the other, isn't the that isn't the reason for his coming in saying that we're probably only getting 50-50 out of this, because then it makes land exchanges makes them more palatable, because now the differential in what the state is giving up is considerably less. So you have to begin from that point. We're not willing to do that. We're not willing to concede that we are not entitled to a 90% royalty share. Or if we're going to lose a portion of that 90% royalty share, that we ought to receive some remuneration for that. There ought to be a quid pro quo. But if you can conclude that it is a 50-50 scenario, then the question becomes, what politically do you gain versus give up? What we give up politically is the mind and hearts of a whole lot of senators and representatives who view this as a clandestine effort to trade away our nation's valuable resources in order to bring political pressure on the Congress to open up Anwar. In other words, getting it into private hands to begin the development so that the exploration phase is done, so that you know what's there, that in turn will generate that much more political pressure on Congress. Those people who view that as the scenario are going to be adamantly opposed and continue to be opposed to the land exchange process. And they're bringing a whole lot of, I guess, what you consider to be could consider to be self-righteous arguments. That is that the public process was denied. It was done in secrecy. Words such as teapot dome. Believe me, Judy Brady wasn't the first one to use that term. I heard it up on the Hill. Insidious, whatever the wilderness or the Wildlife Federation's adjective was. All of those things are the types of things that you hear very quickly. The only people I heard promoting the land exchange process was the Assistant Secretary, Senator Stevens, and Representative Young. Now, let me make it very clear that I don't think that the battle is over with on them. And if it moves to the stage that it looks like a winnable deal, if it looks like it's even going to get out of the Secretary's hands, because I'm not sure that it's going to get beyond Hodel's level, the pressure may be at the secretarial level to kill this whole affair. And we don't want to get involved in a political battle that may not ultimately be fought on the Hill, or if that it is fought on the Hill, that we don't have to be a party to. If it's a process that we can see it being in the best interest of the state of Alaska to re-engage in this, I think the governor has made it very clear that we will re-engage. If it becomes a situation where it's clearly in the best interest of the state of Alaska to permanently withdraw, we will permanently withdraw. Let me suggest one thing. Everything that has been done to this point on the part of the state of Alaska has been to perfection. If you were to sit down and map it out and say, where do we want to go from here to get to there, the state of Alaska could not have done anything better from its position in December of 1986 till to date. You may recall that the assistant secretary sat in front of this group and said that the state of Alaska ought to be one of the major participants, that the state of Alaska has a whole lot of land that they could bring to the table. Well, I dare say the only reason he said that was because the state is no longer at the table, and they would like very badly to get to the state to the table. So we've already made tremendous ground over where we were in December of 86 when they were saying, you have nothing to offer us. We're not interested in what the state has. And you can be at the table, but you're only going to be at the table to witness what is going on and to advise as a sovereign. We've made tremendous strides since that point. So withdrawing served a very good purpose for the state of Alaska. There is no good reason at this point to go back. And if at some point the minds of Congress are changed, or the collective minds of Congress are changed, then perhaps it would be good for the state to re-engage. But at this point, Senator, I don't think that it would be a good idea for the state to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one more question then. What I hear you're saying is that, number one, is that we don't want to associate ourselves with either extreme.
That's a fair statement.
And then would you consider associating ourselves with Atlantic Exchange would be detrimental at this time then too?
Well, it would be detrimental for one reason. And again, I don't think this particular side issue is by no means resolved yet. It would be detrimental at this time simply because those congressmen and senators who know anything about it are adamantly opposed to it. And they may come in and view this as an attempt on the part of the state of Alaska to likewise circumvent the legislative process, getting the...
Which would be an extreme position.
Exactly. While we may in good faith go to the table thinking that it wouldn't be viewed as an extreme position, I think those minds and of Congress that are already set against this would take a position against the state of Alaska merely because we engaged in that process.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And let me, if I may, indicate that we were actually commended by several members for taking the stance that we did, and they are pretty much of that same mind.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Fisher.
Lieutenant Governor, just to follow up with Senator Eliason, what kind of numbers are we talking about that you've talked to? Are we talking 50, 20?
Well, the numbers are hardly reflective of the overall situation because I talked to probably 35 members, but of the members that I spoke to, we probably only need to touch base with two more who are on committees of jurisdiction. That would be Jones and Dingell. That we still need to touch base with. And we targeted those members of very important committees who would have jurisdiction or would be in a position to be drafting legislation having to do with this. So I think that no one has challenged those numbers as being a representative sample, the 150, 150, and the 157 in the middle. And while we are in the process of analyzing it, just as anyone who goes to a legislative body does, where the numbers will drop, there's just a whole long way to go during the course of this summer and the hearings before we can really get a fix on where we think everyone is.
Thank you. Any other questions to the Lieutenant Governor? Thank you very much, Steve.
Thank you, Senator.
You can, if you so wish, why you could stay with us during our process. Is there any... I'd like to have somebody move the CS for Senate Resolution 7.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the CS.
Senate Resolution 7. Resources. Senator Sturgalewski has moved, asking unanimous consent.
Mr. Chairman, is that one dated 5-4?
5-4-87, Brady. Bradley. We have committee substitute for Senate bill, for Senate Joint Resolution 7 resources before us. Been extensive work done on this with senators and senator staff. The resolve on page 3 are in two sections. The resolve, the first be it resolve, are resolves that are directed to the Congress of the United States, and the three resolves in the future, further resolves, or resolves that are directed to the state, position of where we're at, or statement of position. What's the pleasure?
Mr. Chairman.
Now, Senator Sturgill.
Yes, I will support this, but I will, there has been a lot of work gone into it, and certainly bringing together a number of views, but I still feel that we're getting into the one area, need that on the record of the, including the support for the exchange. I think it's going to cause some problems in seeing this adopted this year, and I think it's extraordinarily important that the state does have a position, and I merely make that for the record because I have a feeling it's the consensus of the of this body that that should be included, but I do see it as a sticker out there, and I think it's extremely important we find a way to move ahead the session so we have the state very clearly on record in support of it, in support of the 90-10, in support of local hire, and some of the other issues.
Thank you. Senator, yes, we had the long version that came out with the subcommittee's report, preliminary report, and of course it was long because we tried to put all of the concerns in there, and that's why we backed away and came in after working with Senator Sturgill's group and our group in the committee to try and come up with a resolve that kind of reflected things, and this is what we came out with, and then that's the reason why I put back on the calendar the porcupine herd, caribou herd, and the conservation units in the state, which we had embodied in the first. So is there any further comment or discussion? Senator?
Chairman, I just, of course I wasn't present at the numerous hearings you did have, but I'm rather interested in the second resolve clause. Was that a part of the testimony given during the public process relating to the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska, and the way it was handled?
Yes. There's some testimony on that as to how, and I believe it was brought out by USGS people on the exploration that was done on PET4 by the federal government. There's what was his name?
Max.
Yeah, Max Brewer.
Brewer.
Max Brewer.
Former Minister of Environmental Conservation.
Yeah. He's working for the federal government right now. He made it. If you'd like to see the part of that record, I can get it for you, sir.
Well, no. I mean, if we're going to...
We're asking
to support to open ANWR, and now we're going to get conditions. Now, if they don't want to do it this way, does that mean that...
We're just asking the federal government to open it up, Senator, without them going in and doing it under the same form that they did it under the Petroleum Reserve, where they did the drilling.
I'm unaware of what happened, so I just questioned that because I didn't know that was going to be a part of the resolution. I don't know if it's good or if it's bad or indifferent. So at least we know there's oil in PET 4.
Well, they didn't find it.
They didn't. That's what they had to say about it. That's the only question I have.
Any question? Want to move it?
Chairman.
Senator Jones.
I'll move and ask unanimous consent that the committee substitute for Senate Joint Resolution Number 7 House Committee limited the recommendation.
Any objection? No objection. If so ordered. So committee substitute for Senate Joint Resolution 7 Resources moves out of the committee with individual recommendations. We have Senate Joint Resolution 17 relating to the federal managed conservation units in the state. And in your packet, we've made three recommendations that we changed. We changed the title to relating to the federal conservation system units in Alaska. And on line 27, clean up, we add after the semicolon and.
Where is that, sir?
That's the one.
What?
There's no substitute prepared, Commissioner.
No, there's no substitute prepared.
It's just a memorandum.
Yeah, memorandum. In fact, we didn't realize we were going to be bringing it up.
Is that 17?
Yes.
Do you have 17 here?
I do.
13, is it 15 or 17?
Well, 17. Wait a minute. Sir?
Are you hearing from 17 and 13 before?
No, we have not. They were all part of the hearing process.
Oh, okay.
The process that we had.
As we traveled around.
Yeah, as we traveled around, so we have them. And they, on line 28 was to, the whereas to, whereas the Congress of the United States recognized in section 101D of the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act that the, and to add that the need for further legislation designating new conservation system units, common new national conservation unit system, or new national recreation areas has been obviated by passage of the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act. What's the pleasure of the committee? Is it to move it with the amendments? Do you want to amend them? Basically, what we're saying here, committee, is that the Senate Joint Resolution 17 actually is saying that there's enough, that there's enough land already taken into conservation units systems, and that the passage of the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act took care of all of the movement to pull more land out of the public sector and put it into classified areas. Senator Jones,
I'll move the all three amendments.
Senator.
Mr. Chairman, I just need to ask a question. We just passed out a resolution, SGR 7, that talked about land exchanges, value land exchanges. And some of those value land exchanges may end up by adding more to federal conservation units in the state. I'm wondering if we're not refuting in this resolution what we just said in the other resolution.
Well, you speak to amendment number three.
No, I'm speaking just of the resolution as in its entirety, because I believe this talks about, as I be resolved, the last legislature of Congress, not designate further acres to the state of Alaska with wilderness status and not add further acres to conservation system in the state of Alaska, et cetera. Part of the land exchanges that may be going on would be to add more.
Well, it's an exchange, so I don't think it would be adding.
Well, it would be.
Oh, yeah.
No. Enlarging, not adding.
Well, it would be adding further acres to conservation system in the state of Alaska. I'm concerned that we're refuting just what we said in HJR 7, or SJR 7. I don't want to call it HJR, but.
Well, I guess, Mr. Chairman, I guess so. It's a true land exchange. We're exchanging ANWR for other federal.
We're saying value for value, Senator.
Yes. But are we saying
we're exchanging subsurface for surface? What's the difference?
What are you saying? What did you say, Senator?
Well, I think that what we're talking about, if the Native Corporation entered into land exchanges, so we'd be adding actual surface acreage to the conservation units, while the inside the ANWR itself, we're trading subsurface.
I think, just Mr. Chairman, I think we need to look at that more.
Senator Jones.
All right. We're talking about private inholdings that are being traded. That would involve refuge. That refuge is not state lands or
state.
That's what I'm saying. Maybe we need to change that and identify
Well, we could amend it, Senator Duncan, on the second page right after acreage. You could say outside land exchange process or something, but I don't think that when you talk about acre for acre, it's not acre for acre, sir. It's value for value.
I know that. I understand, Mr. Chairman. It's value for value. What you're exchanging is actually...
You're buying.
You're talking about subsurface values within ANWR, and you're talking about not necessarily subsurface values outside of ANWR. So you are adding acreage to the federal conservation system, and you are designating additional acreages as wilderness.
Article, you have to read the resolution in its true context, Senator, that you're saying on the whereas on... that on line 28, whereas...
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Gerdlewski. I was going to say something. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. When you're finished.
You say that the resolve says that the Alaska legislature, that the Congress of the United States not designate further acreage in Alaska with wilderness status and not to add further acreage to the conservation units in Alaska until extensive mineral, forest and wildlife resource assessments have been conducted with full public participation for the good of the nation and the people of the state of Alaska. So, I mean, it's not in context of what you're talking about.
Mr. Chairman, I think we just have a legitimate disagreement on how that reads. And I think if you read that literally, it would say that we're urging the federal government not to add anything into wilderness status or further acreage conservation system, et cetera. But the land exchange process is going on prior to any of this extensive mineral activity. And I just think it refutes what we just said in SJR 7.
Well, if you have...
Maybe I'm the only one that thinks that, but...
Thank you. We'll hold it back until Wednesday, and we'll get the language. I understand what you're saying. We'll hold it back until Wednesday, and we'll get
motion on that.
Maybe there's a majority who doesn't think that's what it does. I don't think we're trying to.
I think you got a legitimate. I think that we do have to get an amendment in there, but I would like to try and get through some of these other things. Yeah. I think we're getting kind of high centered. Yes, Senator.
Mr. Chairman, I would only say that in your looking at it, even though you do set up qualifications, I think you might want to look at those too. In fact, there is 1 million acres that's going to be added, and it talks about the extensive mineral and so on assessments, but also full public participation. So somehow you've got to take out of that any proposed land trades, I think, and then there's a way to make it consistent.
I want to do, but sure. The thing is that I don't believe that when you get down to the new nomer of land trades, it's a perception out there that it's really a value for value. It's not an acre for acre. Yes, Senator.
Mr. Chairman, well, the question I have, too, is there a movement in Congress now to set aside additional lands in Alaska? Is there any legislation in the mill to do this? And if there isn't...
Don't call our attention to it.
If there isn't, I think we have one issue with ANWR, and we start sending back other resolutions pertaining to the whole management of Alaska lands and screw up the whole pot again. Is that going to be in the best interest of the state? I mean, if we stick to one thing... I mean, if in fact there is something in the legislation now that's going to lock up more Alaska lands, maybe we should act. But if there's not, you know, why dilute our ANWR resolution?
Because Udall's position is total lockup of the whole Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, the whole thing. I mean, his bill. Just locks it up.
Why don't you address it specifically then?
Well, this is not locking up that, sir. If you read the bill, Senator, the bill has to do with taking and making mineral assessments before they do. We're saying before you lock up any more of Alaska, we want a timber assessment, a mineral assessment to the lands. It really is a kind of a spin-off, but it doesn't address just ANWR. It has to do with the National Forest and everything else. I mean,
we hold it till Wednesday then?
Yes, we'll hold it until Wednesday, and I'll try and get this thing.
Mr. Chairman, Chairman, they are. Mr. Chairman, Senator Jaroff and I have to go to budget.
I'm trying to get your bill, see how, I'm sorry that I took so long on it, but if you need to go, I'm trying to get to a bill here called Bridget Point Park.
Yeah, I thought we were going to do that earlier. Proceed.
Can we do Bridget Point?
Can we do that right now?
Two items that I want to bring to the committee's attention. Is the committee has, I passed this out at the last meeting, and this was the bill from the Resources Committee establishing the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge Policy Council. If you're going to have to leave, I just want to get some, get authority to bring these three out on the floor as resource bills.
Oh, that's fine. Can I just introduce them? Mm-hmm.
Just introduce them?
Sure.
Introduce them as resource bills and have them go to
Mr.
the...
Mr. Chairman, what are the three again?
One of them is establishing the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge Policy Council. It establishes where the governor appoints three, Senate appoints three.
Yes, no, that's fine. Points. No problem. But I thought you said you had three things.
And I have three things, yes, before they leave. And then I have Senate Joint Resolution and relating to water quality standards of the state under the Clean Water Act, and the other one relating to water quality standards regarding turbidity under the Clean Water Act. And this is in place of 98, moving those out. One resolution is directed to request the Commissioner of Environmental Conservation to submit an outline of the procedures that are necessary for the Department of Environmental Conservation to submit to the Environmental Protection Agency a revised water quality plan by November 1 of 1987. And the other resolution has to do goes to the Congress and asks the Congress and the requested to seek legislation or regulatory changes that would alter and waive each requirement of law that would preclude the state of Alaska from applying water quality standards to state waters that reflect the actual use of the water, and two, makes a turbidity a necessary part of the state's water quality plan. I'm just trying to get those three out. But if you guys got to go, we're still going to have a majority of committee, or do you have to go too?
He has to go, geez.
Should we go back to the porcupine herd, or should we take up the... If I'm going to lose all you guys, I better have those three things taken before I lose you.
Let's do 190 first.
You're going to put those three in as resource?
Yes. Is there any objection to putting those three in as resource? Waving them on.
Well, I don't know about waving them on.
You want them to come back here?
Yeah. Just, let's see what they look like after they're drafted.
Okay. Wave them on.
Fred, you want to look at
them? Chad, you would.
Sorry.
Goodness sake.
Senate Bill 190 before us. Senator Duncan's bill requesting the establishment of acres to go into a Bridget State Park. It's open for a public hearing. Do we have
another part?
We need this brief sign up sheet.
Mr. Chairman, just very briefly, if I could. I don't know if anyone here is going to testify in opposition to it.
Well, I'm trying to get the sheet.
If
the
they are.
Whole slug of them.
But I don't think they're in opposition to it. If I could just say very quickly, we've had one hearing on this in Committee of Regional Affairs, and I think it was very favorably reported out. There's been a lot of public testimony, both by POM and letter, and a public hearing here in Juneau last week, and everyone there testified in favor of the City of Grove. Juneau has gone on record in favor of it. The City of Grove Planning Commission of Juneau has gone on record in favor of the statute of the park. There's been no opposition here at this time to creation of a park in that area. And Senator Sturzulewski, could add to that.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Sturzulewski.
Been a very well organized effort, and I think every question we've had was answered. But I do have one question of the prime sponsor, if I may. The one issue that there was happened to deal with the litigation between the University of Alaska and the municipality of Anchorage. Have they made any serious objections to the inclusion of this as a park?
I've been working with the department and with the university, and we're working to resolve that problem. I think we will be able to. The public hearing was held here a week ago Thursday, by the university, conducted by the department. I think gave clear indication to the public that the area wants that land withdrawn from Atlantic Street. I'm very optimistic, although I don't think it can finally firmly resolve it, I'm very optimistic that can be done without destroying the package being put together at the university.
We have three people we've got three people signed up, Senator. I have a couple questions just briefly. It has to do with mental health lands. Is there any mental health lands involved in it?
There's none.
Is there, and the access to go through the park is there so that there wouldn't be any problem with the road right-of-ways going farther on? It's not
well. There's a map in your folder that shows that the highway extends on beyond Point Ridge at this time. The highway it does not have any impact on the right-of-ways of the highway, nor would it stop any further extension of that highway. The map in the packet shows the location of Point Ridge, and the highway runs by it at this point already.
Okay, well, we'll open it up for public hearing, and we'll try and accommodate you just as rapidly as possible, sir. Rob Bosworth from Juneau State Parks Advisory Board.
Chairman, can I ask a question?
We got to get them up here.
This may be a unique situation where maybe the people are satisfied with it the way it is, and they don't care to testify. I don't know. I thought maybe some of them would not want to testify because they see that the bill is such a...
I don't know. They just said they want to testify. I mean, you guys stopped me from ramming something through this committee.
Mr. Chairman, we would never do that, though.
Rob, welcome to the table. Would you give your name for the record?
Yes, I will. Mr. Chairman, my name is Rob Bosworth. I am with the Juneau State Parks Advisory Board. There are three of us here in attendance today, and we are all in support of the proposal. We don't need to take a lot of your time. We simply want to ask that you do pass out the bill. We feel that there's been an ample representation of support in the community, and we're prepared to answer any questions you may have. So thank you.
Thank you, Rob.
Senator,
I just have one question. You say you're a member of the three of you who are members of Juneau State Park Board?
The Advisory Board.
Advisory Board. Yeah. And I have letters here that says there are no state parks in this area. And how long has your group been in existence?
We've actually been in existence for about 4 years. Although there is no state park in the Juneau area, the state does manage a set of trails in the Juneau area. So that is the state
That's
park
what presence. Dealing with in the past. Okay.
Primarily, yes.
Anybody have any questions? Thank you, Rob.
Thank you.
We have Scott Foster.
I don't have any to testify, thank you.
Gene O'Hara.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'll be brief. For the record, my name is Jennifer O'Hara. Today I'm here on behalf of SEAC and also the Alaska Environmental Lobby. There are basically three reasons we would like this to become a state park. The first one is it would be the only state park that is in Juneau. The next one that is closest is in Haines. Secondly, we'd like to see these lands managed for their highest value, which we see as recreation. And thirdly, this is the largest remaining contiguous parcel of state land in Juneau with park potential. So we hope that we'll see this as a state park. Thank you.
Senator
Lassen. One question.
Managed for its highest value. Is that, in fact, the highest value? Have you determined that? Who has determined that at this point?
That was in SEAC and the Alaska Environmental Lobby's opinion.
That was their opinion, okay.
Yes.
We don't have any, do we have somebody here from DNR? Hi. Heidi. Carol, what's the position of the department?
At this time, because of the settlement of University and Municipality of Anchorage, the land entitlement settlement, we're not taking a position on this bill because some of the land in the proposed park is part of that settlement pool of land. Mm-hmm. And this is what Senator Duncan has been working on.
And with the budget decreases that we've got going, is this going to be just, do we have to have a whole covey of park rangers and new program out here, or is this pretty well contained and the borough going to take care of it, or how is that going to work?
If the park is established, there is a whole network of volunteers who have gotten together and are very willing to make trails and so on to guarantee that there is identified access there. We have a small fiscal note because there should be someone to help supervise volunteers and that sort of thing.
Senator Jones.
I'm for the state parks, and the only problem is that in Ketchikan, we can't even maintain the state parks we have because DNR says they don't have the money to maintain them, and we're adding more state parks now. I don't see where we're putting more money out for those. It's fine to establish the park, and it's fine to build the trails and do all those things, but then there's a continual maintenance that goes on. I just would like to see better support of the state park system as it stands now before we start adding more to it. Even $25,000 would help maintain one of our parks there. So. I mean, it's all over the state. We've got a problem with keeping these parks up.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator.
Let me say, I would agree with Senator Jones. I think we need to maintain our parks better than we are. Perhaps you should talk to Co-Chairman of Finance about getting the budget cap raised on DNR.
You're on Finance,
so
right?
So we can do that.
Okay.
We're very willing to help you. Let me say on that question. The fiscal note was prepared by the Department of Natural Resources for $25,000 for half of a park ranger or somebody to oversee volunteers. However, there are numerous volunteers and organizations in this community who have indicated they're willing to put forth their time to help develop trails, et cetera, out there. We're not asking at this time for any major park development as far as shelters or anything like that goes. So we're not asking for for a large fiscal note on this piece of legislation. The important thing is to get that established as a state park at this time. The problem with the university that DNR mentioned, I believe, is not a serious problem. It's clear from the public record that this community would prefer to see that land in park status. As I said, the City Grove Assembly has gone on record supporting that. The Planning Commission has gone on record supporting that. There is no opposition to it. I've worked with the department, with the university. The university wants to cooperate with the city, with us on this. They do not want to be in a position where they need to take that land in the settlement. And I think the resolution can and will be worked out. The reason why there is not yet is because the public hearing deadline is May 14th, as I understand, and the commissioner cannot make an announcement until after that time has closed. But I am very optimistic that we will not see this as part of the university package.
Senator
Rasmussen? I supported parks in the past, and I probably continue to support parks. However, I would like personally, I'd like to see the whole package. Now, certainly, it might be questionable if I support a park in this particular district if it takes land away from my constituency in another district. And I read in the newspaper just recently that they're going to exchange land on Agatega, which is in my Senate district, which we've had numerous public hearings on relative to the Agatega State Forest. And there are a lot of people in Yakutat who have a vital interest in our state forest and probably in any land exchange. So the question I have is that a viable consideration this time?
Mr. Chairman, at this time, there's a pool of land, and it's not acres, it's a value of dollars that must be met. And right now, that land is being appraised, so the land that's in the pool, we don't truly know if there'll be a lot of money left over, that some land could drop out and the settlement could still take place or not. And that won't be known until the appraisals are completed and we figure out which lands would be dropped out. If there's not enough land left in the pool to satisfy the university and the municipality and all of that, then the settlement couldn't take place until there was other land identified.
Well, what land is in the pool if you identify that?
Yes, and we have a real thick packet of information.
Is Jagga Pagga in that pool or not?
No. So this particular piece of land you're speaking about is what Senator Duncan is interested in.
No.
Please don't speak. So that's the only question I have. I don't have any problem with, but I don't want them taking that land away with us.
Mr. Chairman,
reclassifying it without the public process going forth in the ag debt.
Let me clarify that. The statement from the department is absolutely wrong. It's not the land I'm interested in. If I asked the Department of Natural Resources to come up with the university with other lands that they might look at, and they're not. If Cape Yakutaga would be the exchange, it would not be taking lands out of your constituents' hands. There's timber rights on Cape Yakutaga right now. Either the state will develop those timber rights, will sell them off to a private individual to timber, or the university could. So it would only be a change in who receives the revenues from selling those timber rights, whether it be the state or the university. It wouldn't be taking any land and locking it up away from your constituents. But let me make it clear, I'm not necessarily supporting that. I only ask that they develop a list of lands. Unfortunately, that got into the paper and was not a recommendation from me. I'm not about to go into some other senator's district and make a recommendation on lands. That has to be something worked out between the department and the university. I think it's clear, though, that the university has gotten a message that this land out in Bridget Point should not be included in that packet. The university has told me directly they do not wish to proceed and get into a confrontational status over that land of Point Bridge. How they finally resolve that that total exchange package is unknown at this time.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator, once again, I don't know whether it's good or whether it's what type of reception the people in the ECHAT are going to have over if this is going to be a change. That's not the question. The issue is they should have their input into any exchanges in that area. And you know, if we can go forward without that exchange, that's fine. But I don't want that to be the park contingent upon taking that land out of the Yakutaga.
Let me make it again very clear. It's unfortunate that it was in the paper that that's one of the areas that the department identified. They could not make an exchange in the Cape Yakutaga area without holding public hearings so that the people in Yakutaga, your constituents, could testify on that. For the department to infer that that was my preference, I really take... I'm really upset at that statement made from the department, for one. Secondly, it has no relationship at all to this park. You know, this land could be dropped out of the exchange packet. The Cape Yakutaga land doesn't have to go in. This is a big state. There's other areas where they could find the land to make up the value that they need.
Carol.
Yes, I wanted to apologize for Senator Duncan. That's an unfortunate choice of words on my part. There are two entirely separate things going on here. First of all, the pool of lands that's identified for the settlement. Land may drop out for many reasons because of the public hearing process, the public hearing that we recently had in June on the other areas. Whatever information we received as part of that public hearing will help us decide if those parcels should remain in the pool. At that point, we'll total up and see if there's enough value there to satisfy the settlement. If not, then we have to decide how to proceed. Is there something else that's going to settle this? And we may have to find more land around the state. And since we don't know what's going to happen in this one case, we have no idea where this other land might be. And before any land could be traded or exchanged or sold, we'd have to do some kind of public process on new land. So they are separate. It's just that we cannot take a position on this because while the public process is open on this particular piece of land, it wouldn't be appropriate for us to say, oh, we're going to pull it out of the pool now, because the whole public process is supposed to decide that, and we want to preserve that.
What's the land we're talking about here?
In the Point Bridget Park, right, since that's part of the original pool. Aren't we
at the legislative body taking it out of the public process then?
If you passed the bill before the public process is completed, that would be a whole other matter.
But Mr. Chairman, we surely have the right as the legislative body to do that. We also, there's nothing saying
just because Commissioner DNR and the university put together a land pool that included this, that we can't find that there's another use for that. That doesn't interfere with the public process. The public hearing has been ongoing. There was a public hearing in this town a week and a half ago on this where many people turned out and everyone testified in favor of it being a park. I'd be very surprised. In fact, I'm really kind of disappointed that I guess it's only because of legal requirements that they have to wait until May 14th to make a decision. I'd be very surprised if the Commissioner of Natural Resources would find against the public of Juneau that that land should be included in the exchange packet. I'd be very surprised and perhaps a little disappointed. I mean, it's not like just some legislator got this idea together, right? The same girl, Juneau, has gone on record, the bank has gone on record, and there's no group out there who's lobbying on the other side.
But I just wanted to make clear that if, in fact, I vote for a park bill and find out down the road the price of this vote was a chunk of land out of my district, I don't think I'd like it too well.
Well, I don't blame you. I wouldn't like it either. I think I'll have a discussion with the department to be sure next time they testify, they say what they mean.
Senator Jones.
My only concern, Mr. Chairman, is that $25,000, how do we know it won't come out of the Lyman Park and Ketchikan if we don't add it back in? It doesn't get added in the budget.
The fiscal note on this bill, we'd have to find some way to supervise and work with the volunteers in town to establish some sort of trails. I don't think there would be $25,000 to come out of any other place.
Mr. Chairman, you know, that Senator includes hauling the garbage and doing all those things that come along with having the park. The volunteers going to do that too?
The volunteers in this community have been very, very supportive, and we support the idea of a park in the capital city. If we got to the point where we couldn't do anything more, of course we'd have to close something, but in this case, I don't think that would happen in Juneau.
Okay, Senator Picker.
Mr. Chairman, why not just make it a zero fiscal and let the volunteers do it? And the only thing you need to do, I guess, would say this is where the trail should be from a topological point of view, and it's done. And the only concern I have is I know the most used parks in the state are in the Kenai Peninsula. And I don't want to see us lose a half-time park ranger there if that's where this is coming from. If this is new money, then I don't have any problem with it. My God, we have garbage all over the place, and I'm talking about Nanochick and Deep Creek, probably two crowds during the summer, and we're not getting the services that we should.
Senator Duncan.
I don't think you're going to see a whole lot more garbage out there this summer all of a sudden because it's created a state park. You're going to see the same people using it that's been using it in the past. We're not talking about putting big campgrounds out there. We're recreational vehicles and all the rest to pull in and hook up for days at a time. None of that's going to be done. All we're doing is at this time putting this land into the state park system, and then volunteers will develop walking trails whatever they would like out there for use. But I guess I don't understand the concern. No one's taking anything away from anybody as far as park maintenance in Ketchikan goes. And if we do pass the fiscal note of $25,000 here, then you've got the extra money for that one half a park ranger to oversee the golf cap.
That's the reason, Senator, why it's going to have to. Does it go to
finance? Yes, it goes to finance.
It's going to go to finance, and the thing is that I guess it's a overlying issue that I wasn't aware of the land issue, but the thing is that the overlying issue of the finance part of it, I think that we could probably cut that back down. I think that,
I have no problem with cutting that back down. I mean, on the other hand, when we cut it back down, then Jones gets concerned. So, I have no problem.
No, he's concerned about it coming out of his backyard.
He's concerned about if you don't want it coming out of your backyard, don't cut it down.
No, what he's saying is that if it goes into the pool, Senator.
No, that's what Elias is saying.
Well, that's where it's going to go.
What am I saying?
He was talking about
I said something else. Sure, what I'm talking about is the maintenance part, the cost of
that's
it.
Right.
It goes in with no, if it gets to finance, they say, no, we're not going to put any money into it. And it still goes. Where is the money going to come from, sir?
I guess.
Leave that up to finance.
I think we leave it up to finance. But again, let me just say, I don't see everybody taking their garbage out there and dumping it because it's a state park. Okay? And we're not developing we're probably going to see use of that area in the next few years, just like we're seeing use of it now. People who enjoy the area and who backpack, hike the area, doing the same thing now, and I don't think they're garbaging it up. So I don't think you're going to see any increased amount of garbage out there. We're not putting together a park with this piece of legislation where you're going to see recreational vehicles out there for 2 or 3 days on end and people dumping garbage and that kind of thing. You're not seeing the development of that type of a park at this point. See what I'm saying?
Could we, Carol, could we get, do you have a park ranger in Juneau now?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, there's the area superintendent, and then there are variations, park rangers with different months of service. Because of budget cuts, most of them are only 5 or 6 months.
So there's nothing we can do about that in this committee anyway. They're gonna tackle that up there. So thank you very much, Carol.
One more question.
Yes.
I wasn't quite clear on the May 14th day. What is that the date this whole thing's gonna be a package before? Is that the date of resolution or what?
In the public review process, normally in the department things go out for public review for 30 days or 60 days or whatever, and we don't like to make any decisions during that period of time because it's not fair to the public, we've already announced. So in this case, May 13th is the end of the public review period when the last date comments would be received. And that's why we didn't feel it was appropriate to make an announcement before the end of that period.
I just closed the door so that Bennett's lady can't see you.
He's got the question.
6 weeks on the tube, right?
I didn't hear the answer. Please answer your question.
Answer is no. It's just a public hearing process. They don't want to do anything until then. So, I suspect they support the bill after that.
Well, I know they don't.
Yeah.
They don't.
It's a
time question.
What's the pleasure of the committee?
Chair,
it does have a finance referral.
It has a finance referral.
I can move the bill.
Move the bill with written individual recommendation. Any objections? No objections. It's so ordered. And so Senate Bill 190 passed the committee with individual recommendations, and it'll go to finance. I have one bill I've got the coastal plans, and I've got Senate Bill 108, which is an act relating to the decisions of the Commissioner of Natural Resources regarding the eligibility of application for a pipeline right-of-way permit. I have a CS, and the CS is this little baby's been around a long time. This is the one that has the short form of local hire.
Does this go to judiciary next?
No, it's been to judiciary, goes to finance.
This goes to finance as well?
We need a motion to take a CS though, because it came to us with a CS from
judiciary.
Judiciary. Which is not in our packet. This committee substitute for Senate Bill 108 resources has been gone over thoroughly by the Judiciary Committee. They have added substantially language that prohibits a permittee to a holder to sell or to travel
we
move this CS?
Yes.
It's been moved. CS Senator Duncan moves the committee substitute for 108 resources be adopted.
Nice term.
Yes. Senator Jones?
And ready to move it?
Yes.
It's been moved.
We had to adopt it. Yes. Go ahead.
I move and ask unanimous consent that committee substitute.
Yeah.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill 108 be moved out of committee and we'll be direct.
Any objection?
We have one for these substitutes for it, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Any objection? No objection. So ordered. Do that before we lost our quorum. We're out of quorum. We'll have to take a recess until Sturgiluski gets back.
Just on a roll, too, aren't we?
Yep. Recess is over. Senator Sturgiluski is back. I hope you're successful. This is good. We're back on Senate Resolution 13 relating to Alaska's interest in Arctic National Wildlife Range regarding the porcupine caribou herd. And the resolve that the Senate, by the Senate, that the United States and the U.S. Department of Interior are requested to refrain from entering into a formal international agreement until the present discussion over the future ANWR have been completed and the effect of an agreement on the State of Alaska's Management Authority has been completely examined. And what this is a states' rights. This is really a states' rights resolution asking that our rights be not diminished in managing our resources. And we'll put it open for hearing. We have Ron Somerville is here. This was part of our ANWR hearings, but we have a request for one, so we'll go ahead and hear Mr. Somerville. Welcome to our table, Ron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ron Somerville, representing the Alaska Outdoor Council. I thought I had the opportunity was to give you a copy of the ANWR resolution, which was adopted by the Alaska Outdoor Council at its annual meeting here in April. But more precisely to the Senate Resolution number 13. A fairly simple resolution, but it's more complex, I think, than most people realize. And I'd like to, if I can, take a couple minutes of your time. We strongly support the concept of this resolution, and it's not because we're opposed to a lot of the bits and pieces that are included in the agreement. I want to make that fairly clear. However, a lot of people are saying that a lot of people are pushing for this agreement are saying that it's purely a mechanism to provide for an exchange of information. Now, I worked in the Department of Fish and Game for 20 years and was director of game for 4 years, and we worked consistently with the Yukon Territories, Northwest Territories, on this specific herd. We consistently exchanged information. We had cooperative agreements with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the territories, and the state relative to information gathering, and so forth. I'm here to testify that, as far as I'm concerned, and at least the council, that's a hoax. You don't need an international agreement in order to exchange information. The primary purpose of the agreement is very clear. The environmental community wanted this established during the ANILCA debates, wanted the international park established, and they're using caribou as a mechanism in which to do that. The Canadians want the agreement established because they want it as part of their land claim settlement. I mean, so you can go back and what the reasons are, why the Canadians are pushing so hard for this agreement is very clear. And I'm sympathetic with their concerns. However, I think in some cases we have to look at it from a very narrow perspective, what is good for our interests as well. If you look at the resource itself, 220,000 to 240,000 animals, the porcupine caribou herd has never been in better condition than it is today. There is nothing imminent, even including, as we state in our resolution, the possibilities of opening up ANWR to oil exploration and development that's going to decimate that caribou herd. I think you have to look at the politics of what is going on relative to the agreement. Our opposition to the agreement and support of this resolution, again, is not related to the bits and pieces of it. It has been improved through the years. Commissioner Skou consistently opposed the establishment of an agreement that did not include the fish, the state of Alaska in some form. The agreement still does not do that. And that, I think, is a key point here. If you're looking at the possibilities of ANWR development purely from the development perspective, right now there is no agreement. It is not an international concern. And if that agreement is signed, it's going to be between two bodies, the U.S. of America, Department of State, and it's going to be by Canada. And what that means is, and anything that happens relative to that herd, regardless of what the agreement says, we have elevated the decision-making process to include the United States government. And I mean, that's, we've had that in writing from the Department of State in the past. They have refused consistently to put the state of Alaska in there as part of it, and they well could do that. And the question is, why have they not? There's two parts to it that I say would improve this agreement. One is to say that the management authority still lies with the state of Alaska, just like it did prior to the agreement. Why isn't that in there? We were demanding it consistently from the very beginning, and it's still not in there. And what they're saying is, trust us, our only purpose for entering into this is to exchange information, provide a mechanism for establishing quotas within the two countries. And that's an admirable thing to do. I think the idea of quotas over from here on forward is a good idea, but that can be established without an agreement. I think we can no longer afford, I mean, you and this committee and the state as a whole, look at what's happened to us since 1959, whether it's the Magnuson Act, we're sitting here talking about the drift nets on the high seas, we're talking about getting people out of the 200-mile limit, we're consistently trying to reestablish some of the authorities we've lost in statehood. We have been bludgeoned. No other state in the Union has lost the Fish and Wildlife Management Authority that the state of Alaska has had. And it was most obvious during the Anilka debates. We lost a good share, as you sat here in the committee and listened to Bill Horn tell you, that either you did what the federal government said you had to do, or else they were going to come in and manage. No other state's ever been told that. Now we're sitting here looking at something else that further elevates the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and particularly the Department of State and the Fish and Wildlife Management involving Alaska. And unless there's something in that agreement that says the state of Alaska's authorities are not diminished, we're adamantly opposed to it. And I think a lot of this would not have occurred had, in fact, we had more input into the process. The previous administration, for whatever reason, was geared into getting that agreement before the governor left office. He was unable to do that for a variety of reasons, mostly of which come out of the Secretary of Interior's office, opposition to parts of the agreement. The other thing is, the sportsmen have been totally left out of the process involved in the establishment and construction of this agreement. I understand that somebody from the Wildlife Federation, Alaska chapter, was involved in the last negotiations in December in Seattle. However, gentlemen, and Senator Sturzaluski, I would like to remind you of the same group that supported the Anilka provisions, which included the establishment of the park system. I'm talking about the National Wildlife Federation, that has consistently voted against the maintenance of states' rights for Alaska to manage its fish and wildlife resources as well as to hunt and fish. So I don't really think that that's representing the sportsman's group. I know you've had a letter from them in support of these things representing the hunters in Alaska, but they are a federation, and to my knowledge, they do not have one sportsman's group from Alaska as part of their federation. We have 47 of them. And I still think that that represents a significant number of Alaskans relative to their position on the issue. I've taken a lot of time, but I think the major part is, at least, and I understand the politics, the chances of this going through may be slim. However, I would still like it to be addressed because I think it's important. At least something going forward saying that no agreement be signed unless there is a clause included clearly stating that the agreement will not affect the pre-existing fish and game management authorities of the state of Alaska. Thank you for taking
your time. Is there any questions of Mr. Somerville? The resolution is straightforward. I mean, that's basically what we're asking. Is there?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Sturzaluski.
I wondered, I'm surprised to see a Senate resolution as opposed to a SCR, SJR. Again, we get back into
that. Well, we get back to that. Yes, this was put in, it was my understanding that there was one on the House side, and that we wanted to, this is an expression, it was be an expression that I wanted to get in so that we could get the committee thing going. I don't see how we could change it to a joint. We could if we wanted to.
Well, we can't. I don't think we can change it that way. But it just, again, we get into that. One side says yes, and the other side doesn't say anything. And I just don't think that's good precedent. But.
Thank you, Ron. It's a pleasure. Senator Jones, Senator Blassen.
Just one question, Mr. Chairman. I don't see the language of Ron proposed in here. I do see just a general reference to management authorities. It doesn't, well, it's not as explicit as his proposal, unless it's in there somewhere I can't find it.
On line 16, page 2.
What's it say? It doesn't
say that the Interior Department, State Department, the Interior Department refrain from entering into any formal international agreement until the present discussion over ANWR have been completely in effect of an agreement on the state of Alaska's management authority have been completely examined. In other words,
he specifically said that there would be no agreement unless Alaska retained their management authority. That's not what I heard him say.
Ron.
I didn't mean to confuse the situation. All I was stating is that I understood the complexity of the politics dealing with this in the hierarchy of the majority in the Senate. There should be opposition to this resolution. I'm saying at least it seems reasonable if the resolution itself is cut down, the specific wording could still go forward saying no agreement should be signed unless there is a clause included clearly stating that the agreement will not affect the pre-existing fish and game management authorities of the state. And that to me is the crux of what we're trying to get at.